Let's have an AA meeting. My name is Julie and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. I have the privilege of introducing our speaker tonight. I don't know how long I've known Judy, but I think pretty much from the minute I came into the program, I can tell you that I've known her before I had even a single gray hair on my head. So it's been a long time. And the thing that kills me, though, is this woman has not aged one day in the 20 years that I've known her. I've never known anybody to wear the world so loosely, like a loose garment. And it shows on her face, it shows in her demeanor, it shows in her voice and her loving spirit. And I just love her spirit, and I think that you're going to love her spirit, too. I give you Judy.
Well, good evening, everybody. Yes, my name is Judy, and I am an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. And it's so good. Before I came here, I didn't even know I existed. I used to look in windows like that and see if I had a reflection. I lived in New York, and I'd be on the subway staring. So when you guys would say, "Hi, Judy," then I felt I existed. That's an amazing thing. The other part about it, when I say I'm an alcoholic, now that's not something when I was a little girl, I got on my knees every night and said, "Oh God, when I grow up, please, please let me be an alcoholic." But actually, it's an amazing thing. I want you all to look around and feel that you are surrounded by people so much like you. I was unique. There was no one like me. I was so sensitive. No, but if you were as sensitive as I, you'd have to drink. You just have to numb. That is so interesting that in this room, there may be someone to save your life, and you may say it's somebody else's life. This is the best game in town. Because when I'm in church or anywhere, I don't know if people would actually come to me if I were in trouble. I have no idea. They might be too busy. They might have all kinds of excuses. But here, this is part of this amazing program. Because if you need help, we're there. But why? Because it helps us. That is such an amazing concept that I had no self-esteem when I came in. And you know what they say? It's fascinating. If you don't have self-esteem, do esteemable things. What a concept. So the privilege of not only being able to reach out my hand if I had one day, because I had one day, and I knew the struggle, gave me a little bit, oh, maybe I do have something to offer. So the fact that people in this room know what it is not only to suffer, and you didn't come in here on wings of victory, I bet. I certainly didn't. When I came in, it was this time of year that it was happening. The days were getting shorter. It was dark earlier, and Halloween was coming. Well, that was a perfect holiday for me, because from the time I was 4 and a half, I had been wearing a mask. I wore a mask so that I could present to the world what I thought the world needed from me. So when I say my name is Judy and I'm an alcoholic, yes, I'm an alcoholic, but I didn't know how to be Judy. I had not the vaguest idea of what a Judy was supposed to be until I came here and learned to be authentic. Now I'm going to go into that word because I love words. When you're authentic, you're following your author. Your author has created you to be unique, to be the person. I'm getting goosebumps because it is spiritual. You all are special. You wouldn't be here if God didn't want you to live. We are here tonight, and anyone who knows about this disease knows at this very moment there are people in ICUs dying of this disease. And it's amazing to be able to surrender or just be willing for a day, because I'd had people call the police, break down my door, carry me out to a rehab. I had shamed my children. I did things that were humiliating, absolutely humiliating. But somehow, God let me live so that I have almost 20 years of recovery. And my hair is grayer than Drew. But I use Vidal Sassoon. And I know how to do it myself because I'm an alcoholic. And alcoholics like to do things themselves. We just do. So I did it this afternoon because it's not what I say, it's how I look. No, I'm kidding. I'm really kidding. But I was talking to Jason earlier. I am so much healthier than when I came in. I'd had 3 years and then went out. So I do know this isn't a disease to play with. I thought, oh, that would happen to someone else. People who have accidents on the highway, driving on the wrong side. No, that's somebody else. You know, domestic violence, that's somebody else. No, it can't happen to me. But I will get back to why this season is important. But I had to get out of almost a 34-year marriage. And that was not easy because I'd married young and I had not been much on my own. So, being the good alcoholic I am with a fabulous imagination, I thought, I'm all alone. I'm 55 years old. This is not going to be a problem. Instead of asking for a realtor, I was new in Atlanta, insurance, any practical anything, I went and got a wig. Now, how can you wig out if you don't have a wig? So I was going to become a goddess at 55 years old. Now, I think many of you know goddesses don't have short, curly hair. They have flowing locks that the breezes from Zanzibar blow through. And it is the absolute necessity for a goddess to stand up on a rock over the sea and let her hair blow. So, with my wig, as I said, I didn't plan anything, but higher power somehow has a great sense of humor. Sometimes I call my higher power Mel Brooks, because that summer I was given an apartment in a very lovely section of Paris. The woman was going away and she needed someone to water her plants. A great job for an earth goddess watering plants in Paris. So that whole summer my wig and I paraded through Paris. I didn't walk. No, I paraded. And did I attract the most amazing Algerian workmen? Oh, I have pictures of me surrounded by wheelbarrows. But that was okay, because I knew these poor men could not help themselves. I was a goddess. And at the end of the summer, in fact, it was the night before Halloween, I was invited to some friends. See, my former husband was an internationally known scientist. That didn't mean that he was a good person. As a matter of fact, I heard a great description of the kind of scientist he was. His body was a means of transportation to get his head to a meeting. He had no connection with the body. It was all up here, and it was all science. And I'm not a scientist. But he had been at a national lab in Paris, and this couple had befriended us, Anne Marie and Philippe. Now, Philippe, knowing he was French, had to give me a French kiss long ago, and I thought, yeah, you're just trying to prove you're French, but we're friends, and I was somewhat sane back then, and I said, you know, let's really maintain this friendship. But now that I was a goddess and all alone, I had something to prove. So I was invited to their home. I went to a salon, and it's Paris, you know, and they have all kinds of perfumes and lotions and potions, and they fixed my wig. Oh, God. So I'm on the metro, which is somewhat like Armada, but they have first class, second class, and I'm on second class, and everyone is smoking cigarettes. Now, I was high on my own fumes, so it didn't bother me as much to smell the Galois and the various French cigarettes. But when I got to my stop, I got off the train, and a couple of workmen followed me. Well, I was kind of used to workmen following me. And so that didn't bother me. But one continued. And I'm walking up the street where Anne-Marie and Philippe live. And he's winking and smoking. And I was getting a little nervous. I really didn't like the fact that he didn't turn back. But I got to their apartment, and there's code, as there are many apartments, and I press the numbers. The entry opens, and I get inside. And he's on the outside, and he's still winking at me. But I get on the elevator and go up to Anne-Marie and Philippe's, hoping Philippe is going to open the door. Well, he wasn't home yet, but Anne-Marie did. And she said, Judith, tes cheveux. Judith, your hair. And I went, do you like it? And she said, it's on fire. That guy had flicked his cigarette. And my wig was now beginning to sputter. Oh, my God. So I had to, you know, just pull it off my head as fast as I could, run to their bathroom, throw it in the toilet, and watch it sputter. Meanwhile, my short curly hair was absolutely sweaty and plastered to my head, and I looked like the rat I was. Therefore, this is a message to many of us. Sometimes we have to feel the heat before we see the light. I sure felt the heat. And then, of course, it was humiliating. But I got home with no preparation for my home, and suddenly I got frightened. See, I pushed it off and pushed it off. I had a talent for pretending there's nothing the matter. Oh, boy, I great talent for pretense. So I walked into the home that I had bought, and I had let a neighbor decorate it. She decorated my house pea green, everything. And skin, no matter what culture you are, does not look good pea green. It doesn't. So the reflection on my face was ghastly. I went into the bathroom to check out this former goddess, and she had hung these Polynesian monkeys. I don't know if you ever have seen them, but they hang on. One finger will hold onto the tail of another. And as I look in the mirror, I felt something hit my back. And yes, it was a monkey on my back. It was a monkey on my back. I could not believe that this woman, I had lived in the Illinois prairie, and I had painted scenes that they were good, but they were scary. They were these white gingerbread houses lit by the sun, but in the background, there were tornadoes. Dark, dark storms coming up. And she'd hung them all over the house. So, there, I called my therapist because as an alcoholic who didn't understand the wonder of this, I have to retrace a little, because here we had Tim, Julie, we had Jackie, we had Ira, and we had the bathtub man. No. Well, come on, say it, because I'm blanking on your smile. Jason and the Golden Fleece. Okay, thanks. I'll never forget it again. I'm so sorry. But if you heard them, there was enthusiasm. There was a depth of feeling in what they were saying. We've all been in hell. We have been in hell. And the fact that we don't want to go back, we don't want to go back. But it is hell. Now, I didn't know that people in AA would be willing to help, because we don't pay you for help. I thought only someone I paid would help me. So I call my therapist, and guess what? The answering machine said, I will be out of the country for 2 weeks. If there is a problem, call 911. So there was a problem, and I went to the liquor store. I got 6 gallons of cheap gin. 6 gallons. Now, that I'm not that big a person, as Julie mentioned. I'm just, 6 gallons is a lot. But I had a plan. I would drink and pass out. I would come to and drink again until therapist got back in town. But I'm very clever. I knew there might be people worrying about me and my family. So I put on my answering machine, I have gone on a spiritual retreat, and I will be back in 10 days. Now, my family would believe something like that. However, I went on a retreat with spirits, and I almost didn't come back, because every time I came to, I was so terrified of being alone, not knowing what to do, not having a support system. Now, all of you have a support system if you're willing and open. And it is honest, willing, and open. The hardest thing I had was to ask for help from somebody like me, because that meant my mask had slipped. And I was really, really in need. And being needy was not something I felt in my gut was comfortable. In fact, it was one of the worst feelings I had, because a needy person could be abandoned. And I didn't want to be abandoned. So every time I came to, I drank more. And I don't know how many days passed. But I would look up and look up at the ceiling, everybody. There are patterns, you can see. In there are popcorn ceilings and a ceiling like this. And those little shapes began to form words. And those words were damning you're going to die. You're going to leave a terrible legacy to your children. You will never, ever be thought of lovingly again because you are killing yourself. Well, I wasn't planning on killing myself. Oh, no. I just wanted to hang on until therapists got back in town. Luckily, I don't know how many days, as I say, had passed, but I had come to Napa before going goddess. And my brother, who is in the program, who lives in Rochester, New York, called Napa. And two people broke into my house and found me in an alcoholic coma. So I was shifted off to a Hazelden. And, you know, they were told on the plane, keep her drinking, keep her drinking, keep her drinking. Because I would have gone into seizures. And when I got to Hazelden, I promised you, that was the first time somebody looked at me as I'm looking at any newcomer, and she said, you're in hell, aren't you? Usually people had said to me, look at you. You can walk and talk and see. You're not in a wheelchair, and you are doing this to yourself. And they would tell me, oh, come on. You can decide to be happy. You can decide to quit. But anyone who's even read the beginning of the big book knows that an alcoholic can't. We can't. It's that first drink that sets off the craving, that sets off all of the mechanisms of the disease. So I was greeted where I was. You were in a place where everyone will greet you where you are, not shame you, because it is a disease. However, when I realized that I could die, because that was the first time I knew this isn't a disease to play with, believe me, it's not, that I surrendered a little bit. It took this hard head quite a while to get out of my wall of words. I'm an intellectual. And before, I just asked Jason, the first trip into sobriety, I was asked on my first year to talk. And I said, I think I recited the Gettysburg Address. And I said, we are a group of the people, by the people, and for the people. And then I did Charles Dickens. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. And this was, I think it was at Ridgeview. I've been to all of them. And I escaped from Peachford. Because they wanted me to trust a group like me. I was up in a tree and they said, let go, you know, we'll catch you. And I thought, you're crazier than I am. So as soon as I got down, I ran out. I did escape. Certainly AMA. But anyhow, that being met where I was instead of ashamed did cause a shift. And she said to me, I'm not going back where you are. I've been there. But I will put out my hand, and if you take it, I'll walk with you. And, boy, was that meaningful. That was so meaningful. Because after that rehab, I came back to Napa, and I lived here. I didn't trust myself. I assure you, I didn't trust myself. I'd look in the mirror and I'd say, well, Judy, how are you going to undermine yourself today? Because I had many ways of doing that. And I didn't want to drink, but I was still kind of afraid. And we have lots of meetings here. I don't know if any of you who are newcomers know that, you know, from 7:30 until 8 o'clock, there are many meetings during the day. And, of course, it takes a while, but you can join the club and feel safe here. And that's what I did as soon as I could. I just didn't leave. I didn't leave. And then I got a roommate in the program. Now, my choices weren't real good, but at least she didn't drink. I did come home from visiting my daughter, and I opened the freezer because I wanted some ice, and there was a mouse, a dead mouse in my freezer. And she told me that the mouse had died on Sabbath, and she couldn't bury it. And I said, I didn't know it was a Jewish mouse. Oh, God. So, you know, we're not all crazy on the same day. That's the good part. You're in a room full of people who are not all crazy on the same day. And it does take a while of meetings. I can't stress meetings enough. I better look at. Because as I went to meetings, I would hear myself. I thought, before I was so unique, I thought I was the worst person in the world. I really believed it. I even asked, you know, my doctors, am I the sickest person you've ever met? Because the thing is, it was hero zero. I had to be the worst if I wasn't the best. And that part of hearing someone share, oh my God, they felt that way too. They did that too. I'll go back to my childhood because that's when I put on a mask. I am 76 years old with Vidal Sassoon in my hair. But, oh, and I also know how to wear makeup. If anyone wants highlighters, well, nevertheless, there are all kinds of tricks alcoholics know to look normal when they're not. I learned that. That was very important to me, to try to look normal when I was dead, you know, and chirp when I could hardly breathe. But I was always so chirpy that once my daughter, when I answered the phone, it would be morning, and I would say, good morning, a little trill. If it were afternoon, good afternoon. And then evening, of course, good evening. And she said, you sound like a hyper-oxygenated dental assistant. So, okay. The serious part is, I was born when the Holocaust, and I am Jewish, and many of my family members were killed, but the ones on this side, I was 4 and a half, and my father died at night in my house. He put me to bed, and the next morning at breakfast, Mother said to my brother and I, your father died last night. Now, my brother is 3 years older. He's in the program, but he's a rageaholic as well as an alcoholic, and he started breaking things and swearing. I wanted to just keen, if you ever feel like an animal, you know, just a wounded animal, you can't make a sound, but you just want to keen. And my mother took my shoulders, and she said, honey, it's a beautiful day. Go out and play. So from that moment on, I learned to smile, because she couldn't handle it if I were sad. So I wanted to be cared for, and as a matter of fact, I got so good at pretending. Now, the day after Dad died was the funeral, and my cousins and I, and their mother had just died. It was very traumatic for little children. It is for anybody. Death is It's a mystery. It's a huge, wrenching part of you has just been torn away. But we were taken to see Bambi, and Bambi's mother is killed. So this was not the very best recipe for distraction. So, but from that moment, I don't know if any of you saw Bambi, but Disney showed the killing of Mama, and little Bambi looking back, saying, "Mom, we need it." And there's one tear. The next moment, it's spring. We're really thrown into spring, and all the animals are falling in love. So you don't have a chance to grieve. Suddenly, Thumper finds a Thumpus, and little Flowerino, and, you know, they're all discovering love. An owl says to Bambi, because Bambi is, "What's going on?" An owl says, "They're twitterpated." Now, that should have been my diagnosis. Doctor should have said, "This woman is twitterpated." Because I was. I went from grief. I wasn't in love, but I acted. Now, watching this, I have to warn you people about self-help books. Yes, everybody. In the darkest time of my marriage, which was not, I remember, there were so many books on how to make your marriage work, and I thought, my marriage is work. I want it to be fun. I mean, why are they saying how to make it work? It was exhausting. So I wrote a book. I don't know if you can see it. This is the cover. In the midst of a deep depression, it's called The Joy Around You. That's what a Twitter page can do. I was so cheery and telling people how to be joyful that I did make enough money to put myself in a mental hospital for depression. So there was something to that. Now, I have to say back to why we are here, which Julie said, let's have a moment of silence. Why we are here. Every year, probably every 4 or 5 months, there's a new self-help book. But this book has been around since 1939. There really have been no changes because we don't need to make any. Now, I almost, in the beginning, wanted to rewrite it. I really did. Because I'm a writer. And I'm Twitter-pated. And I can make it funny. But I wouldn't have recovered. And that is the most important thing if I can impart to you, is that fighting it as hard as I did and knowing how unique I was, I said, okay, one day at a time I can try this thing. And people have said, and you'll hear it, you know, you can go out again and your misery will be cheerfully refunded. There it is. My misery had been refunded and it was worse. You know, as they say, this disease is progressive. It's fatal. And they also say you can sober up, get locked up, or get covered up. And there are people, anyone who's been around for a while knows that there have been people sitting here that aren't here anymore because for some reason, it could have been pride, because that's one of my big defects. I'm ashamed to ask for help. Oh, I have been until some wonderful people, I'm looking at a wonderful people now, has told me, you're all wonderful because you're here and you want to be what God created you to be. Otherwise, you'd be out there. And it's easy to go out there because you're not locked up. But that whole idea of it's nice to give, but you have to have the circle. You have to be able to receive. Whew. And when I got that, and then, you know, that comfort that I will never be alone, because nobody says, don't come back. After the meetings, they say, keep coming back, no matter what. And I'll give you a little anecdote. I was in New York City to meet some people, and if anyone's been to New York, there is no cheap hotel. And so there's a thing called Airbnb, where you can sign up and say where you're going to go, and you'll find a place. Well, I found a place that I could afford, and I rented it. I get to New York. It's hot. It was hotter than Atlanta. And I have a thing about hot curly hair. You know, jeez. So I get to the apartment. It happens to be a four-story walk-up. And I have the books I'm about to show people, and my backpack, and it was a tenement. I walked in. Oh, there were garbage cans, and these stairs going forever. I get upstairs, and it's called Airbnb. Well, they had no air. They had no bed, and they had no breakfast. There was a mat on the floor. There were no windows, no air conditioning. So I was able to go to sleep, but the next morning I wanted to look at me, because this was professional. I no longer talk about what I'm going to do. I've done it, and I don't like sales. I don't. I'm very creative. Selling is as hard for me as asking for help, because it is asking for help. I want you to like this, and I not only like it, pay me for it. That's very difficult. So I woke up, and I looked in the mirror, and I was taken back to Paris. My hair was awful, and I really wanted to look professional. So I went downstairs. She didn't have coffee. There was nothing. So I went downstairs, and there was a Subway sandwich shop not far. And I got a couple of cups of coffee. And then I walked down the street, and there was a shop that said shampoo. Ooh. So I walked in, and there was an Armenian at the desk. But I said, I need to have my hair shampooed and blown dry. And he said, Jessica, do you have a mom? Or there was no one in there. But Jessica, I wasn't sure whether it was Caitlyn Jenner on a bad day, because this person wasn't sure whether it was male or female, but it was probably 6 feet tall and very slim, covered with tattoos, and heavy chains all around her body. Well, I'm a recovering alcoholic, so, as long as you know how to wash somebody's hair, here I am. Well, this person actually did a nice job, but we're chatting, and I found out Jessica had been all over the world doing naughty things, but anyhow, she was, you know, happy with true confessions. Well, then I had mine. I told her, I'm a recovering alcoholic. You can't compete with me. So she said, you are? There's a meeting just down the street. She took me. Because that's another thing I have to offer. We are everywhere. If you went to the convention on the 4th of July, a rainy weekend, people from all over the world have our disease and love recovery that much that they would come to a convention. So that meeting was wonderful. They, as a matter of fact, they asked me to lead it, and so it was on gratitude that I had stayed with no air, no bed, and no breakfast. But in God's interesting way, I was led to a meeting. I met people there who became very dear to me. And then the next day I was taken to a meditation meeting in a beautiful church where there was a chapel with candles and so on, where we could actually get quiet and be grateful, because you walk down the street in New York and there are many in the gutter. Oh, Lord, and this was a place, of course, that took care of the homeless, fed people, and homeless really have trouble with their feet because you don't change your socks. That, no, but it's true. That's a serious problem. And this place actually had Ralph Lauren socks. He had, you know, just donated food, shelter. And I could cry because it's the kind of world I always dreamed of, where we do not think my God can beat up your God, that we meet on our common humanity, not our differences. We all have our stories, our losses, our joys, but here we are with a common problem and a common solution. And as you heard from the people who read, it grows this delight in knowing that no matter what, on the surface of things, our world doesn't look really pretty, but fundamentally, we know all is well. And the stories you're going to hear as you come to meetings, you're going to hear coincidences that can't be coincidences. I have a quick one because it's funny, normally, my life. A person from AA met me. I happened to photocopy fruits and vegetables. And when I'm at a place like Kinko's, people come over and say, "Oh my God, what are you doing?" And I said, "Did you know there is a phoenix inside a beet? And they say, "Boy, you don't talk about the weather, do you?" But anyhow, this guy had seen me in a meeting, and he told me that his aunt had had a stroke, and she was at Piedmont. Could he stay over, well, at my house while he's taking care of his aunt? Well, a year and a half later, he left. Well, this was fairly early on. But you see, I don't want to be abandoned, so I was such a good hostess. I was so good. I think there was chocolate on his pillow at night, you know, when I turned down the bed. Well, one night he called, and he said, "Judy, I'm not coming home tonight." "Oh, thank you, Jason. Thank you. I've decided I need a relationship with a more age-appropriate person." And I thought, what? Here I have taken care of you? So I said, "Great, just great. And all your things will be on the street tomorrow." Now, that was good for me, because normally I would say, "What can I do to bring you back? I'll give you Cheerios or whatever." But I suddenly, that day, and it will show you why sponsees are important, I felt abandoned. And it went back. I don't know if you, I'm sure all of you know physical that comes from emotion, the gut, everything is heavy. It's hard to breathe. And that came over me and it was frightening. And a sponsee called, and she was a doctor. And I had told her when she went through difficult times and she would go to iMagnon and buy important, expensive things, I'd say, you have to feel what you're going through. You can return it. Well, I told her what was going on, and I said, I'm going to bring home a younger man. And she said to me, if you do that, Judy, it'll be harder to return than what I get at Bloomingdale's. You have to feel what you're feeling. And I thought, why did I have to tell her that? But I sat with it, and it was almost 30 hours. And at the end, I started crying, why did you leave me, Daddy? That was it. Daddy, why did you leave me? That had been stuffed down for so long. And that's why I became a people pleaser. And that's one of my character defects. Because I did things against my values so you wouldn't leave me. So that was a lesson. So I share with you as I close that you are blessed. It's not lucky that you're here. Luck can run out. Blessings don't. So hold that. You are blessed. And all you need to do is be willing, one, sometimes it's 1 minute at a time, to not pick up that first drink, to get to a meeting, to ask for someone to walk with you, because that playground between our ears is a dangerous place to go alone, a real dangerous place. So I bless you all. I'm so grateful that you've chosen recovery. Thank you.
Thank you, Judy. I knew that was going to be fun.